With great enthusiasm and pleasure, I would like to introduce our speaker for this evening, Professor John Hatcher. We are very grateful to Professor Hatcher, who has accepted to provide us with a presentation for this webinar. Before I introduce Professor Hatcher, I'd like to ask you, friends, to please bear with us as we go through this first webinar. No doubt with any new initiative, there will be issues to be resolved, and hopefully this will have a smooth sailing this evening. But in case we run into some technical glitch for many years, I could wholeheartedly say that he is an embodiment of the characteristics that we come across in the writings about the characteristics of a Baha'i scholar. Someone who is wise in utterance, someone who avoids conflicts and contention, someone who is reverent, faithful to the covenant, promotes the faith, and safeguards his interests and educates his fellow men, and exemplifies characteristics such as moderation, kindliness, tact, wisdom, and humility. And I think this is grateful. I'm also very grateful to Parveen Rohani and Niloufar Gordon, who've been providing logistical support for this webinar. So without further ado, I turn the microphone over to Professor Hatcher for his presentation.
Thank you very much, Mehran. You and I know how much you lied, but I'm sure God will forgive you. He's ever forgiving. Friends, this will be fairly informal, and probably most of what I'm going to present and talk about for about 30 to 40 minutes are ideas to deal with. So perhaps they're not so, we can't assume that everyone in the faith who is deepened in the faith or studied the faith has arrived at the same conclusions. And of course, we as Baha'is have only the authoritative writings to rely on, and that's fortunate. So anything I say you don't agree with, turn to the writings and not to me. Some enigmatic questions about the manifestations of God. We're going to deal with six questions, and the first one is why the appearance of the manifest imminently knowable. And in fact, we're told by Baha'u'llah that everything in creation is a confession in some way of the attributes of the Creator. And without that capacity, it would cease to exist. So we go from this basic axioms stated here in Gleanings: he who is everlastingly hidden from the eyes of men can never be known except through his manifestation. And then important distinction, and many Baha'is don't quite get the distinction. I'll show you what I'm talking about with an analogy or two. A second, or I guess actually a third axiom, in this question about why are the manifestations necessary, is the blank statement by Abdu'l-Bahá that without the appearance of these holy beings, that there would be no human civilization, there would be no advancement, that everything would degenerate. To corollary axiom, dealing with the same reality, kun fa yakunu, be and it is. This is the statement of God's will becoming manifest, which, now this isn't from the writing, this is my own way of stating it. On the one hand, we can say as soon as God wills it, it is. It is instantaneous in the mind of God. But from our perspective, in the world of time and limitations, the be and the e are joined and knit together through, we love that word now because it's such an important part of our daily parlance as regards the plans. So we have the divine will or wish to be known, as articulated by Baha'u'llah, or actually by God, through Baha'u'llah and through Muhammad as well, in the hadith of the hidden treasure. I wish to be known, therefore I brought creation into being that I might be known. And so that wish emanates from the power of the Holy Spirit to create an advancing civilization, but only as that wish becomes articulated and sometimes used in a misrepresentation of what is called Anna's conversation in Book 6 of the Rui Course, where we say, we who are physical cannot know the infinite reality of God, or we who are finite cannot know the infinite. So God presents us with a perfect mirror, and therefore we can see the perfect mirror. Well, if you state it that way, that's incorrect, obviously, because if God up here is too much for us to comprehend, then a perfect mirror reflecting God is going to be just as impossible, but of attributes. To use a prism metaphor instead, or at least in addition to, so we have this bright light emanating from God of the Holy Spirit, which to our eyes in this world is not discernible or not distinguishable. We cannot understand it intuitively until the manifestations, like a prism, refract that single unified light into attributes that are comprehensive to us or comprehensible to us. And of course, if we know anything about the spectrum of light, we know it goes infinitely, exists as some sort of beings, but we would not be greatly distinguishable from, we'd probably be dominated by some of the lower animals. Secondly, what is the ontology or nature of the manifestations? This is a biggie. This is important to me because of the way it is misrepresented so often by people who misunderstand what Baha'u'llah means in his tablet to Nasiruddin Shah when he says, I was but a man like others asleep upon my couch. Change from a normal human being to a manifestation. Well, the answers that are authoritative in the writings are absolutely clear on this. Let's look at a couple of them. Like us are pre-existent. Us, this is the guardian speaking, meaning we human beings, we ordinary human beings. So the soul of Christ existed in the spiritual world before his birth in this world. And the guardian goes on to say, we cannot imagine what that world is like, so words are inadequate to picture his state of being. But so that's a first distinction between some answer questions where Abdu'l-Bahá is talking about how we are aware of our bodies intuitively, instinctively. He says, this knowledge, meaning the knowledge of our bodies, is the knowledge of being which man realizes and perceives, for the spirit, presuming our spirit, surrounds the body and is aware of its sensation and powers. This knowledge is not the outcome of effort and study. We don't have to study to figure out that our arm is caught in the door. We screen stations of God surround the essence and qualities of the creatures, transcend and contain existing realities, and understand all things. Therefore, their knowledge is divine knowledge and not acquired. That is to say, it is a holy bounty. It is a divine revelation. In other words, where our spirit surrounds our body, their spirit surrounds reality itself, existing realities. So they are inherently aware of reality. Now, this would go on to obviously imply they are omniscient and senses a situation or condition without having any detailed knowledge of it. They are omniscient. And you can say, well, they're not omniscient all the time, only at will. Okay, they're only omniscient when they want to be. But that's only while they're on this earth, as we'll come to see later in the presentation. They also are, in the afterlife, released from any constraints they have appearing through this persona they assume in this life. Now, I say persona very pointedly, as we will see, because they actually seem to have a decision to use the Rui Course that is infallible, not the Rui Course itself, as we all know, though it's pretty good. What happens with the epiphany of the manifestations, this transformative experience they discuss? Do they really become a different person? Are they suddenly made aware of reality when they weren't before? Well, if we go back to what we just looked at here, that they're inherently infallible, we would say, no, they have that from the beginning. So what really happens? Well, let's see, first of all, what doesn't happen. There is an authoritative interpretation of the tablet to Nasiru. When lo, the breezes of the all-glorious were wafted over me and taught me the knowledge of all that hath been. This thing is not from me, but from one who is almighty and all-knowing. Okay, if we take that by itself, it sounds like he is an ordinary man asleep, and suddenly in a vision he is transformed and taught all that hath been, a knowledge implicitly that he didn't have before. But notice that's the end of the quote from Baha'u'llah. Then Abdu'l Baha goes on to say, this is the state of manifestation. It is not sensible. It is an intellectual reality, exempt and freed from movement. Sleeping is the state of silence. Wakefulness, the state of speech. Sleeping is the state of mystery. Wakefulness is the state of manifestation. And then he concludes this part of his discussion, though he talks about the ontology of the manifestations elsewhere. Briefly, and this is such an important passage, the holy manifestations have ever been and ever will be luminous realities. No change or variation takes place in their essence. Before declaring their manifestation, they are silent and quiet like a sleeper. The writers of books 2 and 4 said that is because of this passage of the Guardian, which said Baha'u'llah received the first intimations of his sublime mission in the Sea of Chao. The thing is, intimation can have several meanings. It could mean, as I thought myself for a long time, that, God sent him a clue, a hint, that you are a manifestation, and he didn't know it before. That's what's implicit in the books 2 and 4. Or it, if you have an Olympic runner who trains, who knows he or she is a runner and trains for 10 years to be a runner, there is still excitement when that gun goes off and the race begins. So if you will, my sense is that what Baha'u'llah tells us about the stupendous nature of that event is no less true, even though he himself knows beforehand it's going to occur. You figure it out for yourself. Aware of station from the beginning. This is another statement of their prolific intelligence, their inherent capacity. So this is on 155. Verily from the beginning, that holy reality is conscious of the secret of existence, and from the age of childhood, signs of greatness appear and are visible in him. Therefore, how can it be that with all these bounties and perfections, he should have no consciousness? And in effect, my inference is, of course, he knows who he is, and of course, he's aware of his station. Well, question 4. Do the manifestations, that they aren't just repeating what they are told to say, that they play a creative role in the words they will use, where they will appear, in what personage they will appear? In effect, they are creative artists, designing their own revelation, designing the social strategies that will be apt for the age in which they appear. As divine physicians, as Baha'u'llah calls the manifestations, they know exactly what the best remedy, dispensation, and the charter of this new world order. From his mind, not from the mind of God as told him. Now, I'm not saying he wasn't divinely inspired. Obviously, a revelation direct from God is what Baha'u'llah calls the inspiration that each of the manifestations receive. And yet it is clear that while the inspiration is from God, the particulars with which they express that inspiration into courses of action is their own devising, unauthoritatively. I have written in a language that you can understand. If I wrote it in a language that I would enjoy and that would be apt for my capacity, you wouldn't understand any of it. Here's one from the Summons of the Lord of Hosts, or from the Suri Haeckel. Say, we have revealed our verses in 9 different modes. Now, what does he mean by mode? Does he mean genre, style? I don't know. You can decide for yourself. But it means, obviously, that in the same way there are 9 doors to the Mashriq al-Azkar, implying symbolically that there are sufficiency of pathways for everybody from every background and every level of intellectual acumen to find a way to God through Baha'u'llah. To me, that's why the diversity of the styles he uses. It doesn't matter what kind of words you like, or what kind, whether you like a very access for everyone. Choosing where, this is another aspect of the manifestation's creativity. They actually choose where they're going to become manifest. Not my idea. This is from Shoghi Effendi, Advent of Divine Justice. The primary reason why the Bab and Baha'u'llah chose to appear in Persia and to make it the first repository of their revelation was because of all the people and nations of the civilized world that race and nation had, as so often depicted by Abdu'l-Bahá, sunk to such ignominious depths and manifested so great a perversity as to find the meanings. No doubt there are others. Choosing the persona through which to become manifest. This one I discovered only a year or so ago. So again, the writings obviously never stop teaching us. There are always surprises every day. The dissolution of the tabernacle, wherein the soul of the manifestation of God had chosen temporarily to abide, signalized its release from the restrictions which an earthly life had of necessity imposed upon it. Now, the tabernacle, that he didn't say, I'm going to be the son of a member of the court of the king. Your guess is as good as mine, and you decide what you think it means. But this chosen right here is the key word, that he has choice, that he decides some part of this. And, of course, also implicit, as we'll get to later, is that he can now do more work, now that he doesn't have to pretend that he's powerless. The creativity of the prophet. This is one of the most beautiful, but we're so fortunate that he was. This is the image. It's obviously an archetypal image of a smithy creating something rather delicate and beautiful on an anvil, and of course by heating it up. And here is the statement, not ours, this is from The Promised Day Has Come, the living witnesses of the all-subduing potency of his faith. To question for a moment, and however dark the misery that enshrouds the world, the ability of Baha'u'llah to forge with the hammer of his will of his will, notice, full poem. Throughout, you see, it is Baha'u'llah's imagination, his will, his creativity, his design that is capable of taking the chaos we have right now that we see so rampant in the world and design a process that will forge all that into a planetary commonwealth. And so you take this and you map out the parts of the image, and you see how visual and how sensually they're infallible. They don't make any errors. But omniscient, that's quite different. Well, we saw the passage already above that they are omniscient at will. And here's another statement. This is in a different passage. It is the same one, isn't it? He likes to be provided with facts by the friends when they ask for his advice. Yeah, this is the same one. So I used it twice, but it worked twice. So he is omniscient at will, the manifestation. Well, I had an argument with he's right. And then I realized, but the essence of God is unknowable, essentially unknowable. So he can only know things that are knowable. Nobody can know, or nothing can know, that which is beyond knowing. Still got omniscience. The most great infallibility. This, of course, you should all be familiar with. You may not have seen all the discussions of it, but we're so much involved now that Book 8 has come out in the Rui course on the covenant, with the distinction between the most great infallibility and the conferred infallibility of, is the manifestation of he doeth whatsoever he willeth. Now, two things here. First of all, while he is inherently infallible, and we even saw above the passage that since his spirit surrounds everything, he knows everything. Of course, that doesn't mean he's going to tell the truth every time, but he does. He is without error in what he says. But there's another implication here, and we're not going to get into it because it's a little too long to discuss it. He is the manifestation of he doeth whatsoever he willeth. There are two ways, at least, of interpreting this. One is done it and could have done it. I think he would have. You can decide. We could vote later and decide if he could or not. Finally, what is the function of the manifestations in the afterlife? This is probably pretty obvious to all of you. They still continue to help us. There's only one thing that sort of surprised me here. It's part and parcel of the whole idea that is discussed in the Igan, where Baha'u'llah talks about to enter the presence of God is really to associate the means by which we attain that presence in the afterlife as well. First of all, we come to this passage, this is a continuation of the one above about the tabernacle he had chosen to work through in this life. But once separated from, once his physical persona had died, its influence no longer circumscribed by any physical limitations, its radiance no longer be clouded by its human temple, that soul could henceforth energize the whole world to agree unapproached at any stage in the course of its existence. Here's a statement that says the prophets in the next world will continue to be our intermediary between us and God. We will have experience of God's spirit through his prophets in the next world, But God is too great for us to know without this intermediary. Notice the capital I, so it's talking about the prophet. The prophets know God, but how is much more than our human minds can grasp. So, when we talk about entering the presence of God, and this is the discussion he has of this whole theme in the Book of Certitude, from their knowledge, the knowledge of God is revealed, and from the light of their countenance, the splendor of the face of God is made manifest. And then finally, the last slide, it's the last slide. And this is very comforting and very empowering. In my presence among you, there is a wisdom, and in my absence, there is yet another, inscrutable to all but God, the incomparable, the all-knowing. Verily, we behold you from our realm of glory, and shall aid whosoever will arise for the triumph of our cause, with the host of the concourse on high, and a company of our favored switch to ocean, in case anyone asks a question that I need to back up with the writings here. So, Niloufar, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, John. Okay, we have a few questions for you. First of all, just a technical question, actually. Somebody was asking whether this session is being recorded and whether it will be available later on. And yes, the session is being currently recorded, and we're planning on having the recording and the slides and possibly other material available on our website, so you can go and see it anytime you like.
It is used in, it was particularly, of course, the Guardian chose to translate the works of Baha'u'llah and Abdu'l-Bahá too into the style of the Elizabethan English, which he so admired in the, as it appears in the King James Version of the Bible. And it's common there. It's also common in most translations of the Quran. Sometimes it will be we, and sometimes I. I don't have a definitive answer other than to say some of the usefulness of it. I've used it myself in my own stations and so on. Or you may, and sometimes, sense that he's using a specific point of view. For example, in the prayers and meditations where he is praying to God, sometimes he will speak of me, and he won't, and the Guardian didn't capitalize it. That's interesting. So, in other words, he is speaking as a suppliant. And other times he will be speaking as the source and the voice of authority. And often he will use the we there. And then we have the whole thing with the say, colon. Have a device, but it also may have in some passages connotations in regard to is Baha'u'llah speaking as the representative of God speaking with authority? Is he speaking as part of the heavenly concourse? Is he speaking as a man among men or an intermediary, and so on? So I think each time it appears, you have to examine the context. In short, I have no idea.
Thank you. Do you have any idea about the following question? How does one distinguish and develop spiritual love?
To know and to worship, to understand God and to put that understanding in practice. It's the first paragraph of the Kitab-i Aqdas, to recognize the manifestation and do what he says. Neither is acceptable without the other. So I think the only way you develop spiritual love is to act it out. And the more you act it out, the more you understand it. And the more you understand it, the more you're capable of acting it out. There's this reciprocity, sort of a tandem effect, where you can become ever more refined and ever more exquisite in your expression of a single virtue. That's, of course, what the Rui, the prime practice of the Rui technique is. You discuss something, you talk about it, but ultimately, when you're through with the book, you go practice, you go do something that acts out what you think you've just learned, and that's where you really learn it.
The next one is, in the obligatory prayer, we say, Thou hast created me to know Thee and to worship Thee. Is the Thee Baha'u'llah or God?
Well, as Baha'u'llah says, I wish I could remember the passage exactly, but the essence of divine unity is to consider the manifestation as inseparable from God. Maybe someone can remember the exact passage, but that's pretty close to it. Really, all we know about God is what we know through the manifestation. I usually think of it as God, but for our purposes, when Baha'u'llah says in the Iqan, were any of these means by which we know God, I would say it's probably better to describe it to those who ask as to know and to worship God. But it doesn't make much difference because all we know about God is what we know through the manifestations. That was a bumbling answer, I'm sorry.
Thank you. The next one. What do you understand the role of the manifestation to be in the process of creation of the physical world?
Say that one more time.
What do you understand the role of the manifestations to be in the process of creation of the physical world?
We do not know how the manifestations of the ancient past taught. What we do know is that they communicated with people in the same way that as did Baha'u'llah and the other manifestations. Now, we could get really deep into this question because if we believe that the human being evolved, even though he didn't evolve from another species or mutate from another species, but was always a human being, he still was a work in process physically until the time he achieved. In that sense, I would presume that the manifestation does not appear among human beings until human beings are at a stage where they can be taught. Now, this might be very, very primitive. It might even be, you know, when we still have not fully developed into what we think we look like today. But that's a pure guess on my part, and it's based on one passage from the Garden.
Okay. Another question is,
let me say one more thing. If that question meant, does the manifestation have any effect on the...
clarify in the chat window. The next question is, the Persian hidden word number 19 seems to imply that we all pre-existed. And so what is your view on that?
It's absolutely wrong. Is this the one about, do you not recall...
Yes.
All right. Are y'all looking at my screen or are you looking at
we're seeing the slides. Okay, now we see your screen.
Okay. Now let me see if I can give me a word from that. I know it's have you forgotten that true and radiant morn, when in those hallowed and blessed surroundings you were gathered in my presence beneath the shade of the tree of life, which is planted in the all-glorious paradise? This is alluding, I'll qualify this as you want. My understanding is that this is alluding to all of the times when the manifestations of the past have told the same truth to the people. And this is spoken to two human beings as an advancing civilization and saying, in effect, don't you remember I told you this before, in the same way that Christ said in the text, you will find that we don't got any. that it's throughout the writings, whether the House of Justice has explicated it, has elucidated it, and so on. This isn't what I want. The fact is that our beginning as individual beings takes place when the soul associates with the body during the process of conception. And that is made here. We can do it this way. See, like the manifestation. And all you got to do is go back to this right here, where he says this. Let's see. Unlike us, the prophets, unlike us, are pre-existent. Well, that's authoritative, and there it is right there. Hello.
Okay. Yeah. So, thank you, John. It's 2:00. We have a couple of more questions.
All right.
Are you okay to take two more questions?
Find the passage that does do that, because this really is going to the same passage, and that is, here, hold on, discarded, okay, the essence, divine unity, let's see, that's going to be my is to regard. Maybe that's it. That's too much. All right. It's the same passage, and I'll find it later, but it's the passage where it says the essence of divine unity is to regard in Christianity. In Islam, we do. We have the Quran, where Muhammad would ostensibly go into a sort of an epileptic seizure or trance in which the believers presumed that the angel Gabriel was channeling the word of God through Muhammad. These words would be taken down. Other words were taken down when he was not supposedly in a revelatory state, and these were the authentic hadiths, such as the one where he designates Ali when he gives the hadith of the twin treasures, I leave you two things, the book and my family. Conversation, though I don't know if we have any recorded conversations. There may be, I don't really know. But everything he does and says has a meaning for us, has some purpose for us. I'm coming into this right now. I know Amrullah, I think Amrullah is on, I hope he is. But Amrullah and I are now trying to translate some of the poems of Baha'u'llah. Do his poems, are they part of the revelation? Well, right now I don't think so, but I'm not sure. So it's a great question, and I would say, on the one hand, if I could find that passage.
What I'm thinking is that maybe the ones that we didn't get to answer today, we can pass them on to you, and you can maybe address them briefly at another time, and we'll post them on our website.
That would be happy
would
to
be
do
okay?
So.
Oh,
sure.
Thank you so much. What is the relation between Baha'u'llah's omniscient knowledge and his apparent shock and sadness at certain situations that occurred during the history of his life, for instance, Mirza Mehdi's untimely death?
What is the difference, you said?
What is the relationship?
This is the passage I was looking for. The essence of belief in divine unity consisteth in regarding him who is the manifestation of God, and him who is the invisible, the inaccessible, the unknowable essence, as one and the same. And here comes the part I was trying to remember. By this is meant that whatever pertaineth to the former, all his acts and doings, whatever he ordaineth or forbiddeth, should be considered in all their aspects and under all circumstances and without any reservation as identical with the will of God himself. This is the loftiest station to which a true believer in the unity of God can ever hope to attain. Blessed is to get out of it any time that he chose to. That's really, to me, the epitome of the suffering of the prophets, is that they don't have to do anything they do. All that they do, they undergo to help us, the very people who are hurting them. So the fact that, okay, he knows he will see Mirza Mehdi in the next world, he knows Mirza Mehdi's okay, he still misses his presence. He still grieves over the absence of this beautiful, fine young son of his. It's still his son. So we know, for example, to give you an even more profound example, that is stated that after the massacre, humiliation are to the pain and suffering of loved ones. We could discuss this at great length. It's very important because it gets into the whole thing of the fact that it is through their free will that the manifestations choose to accept this mission of going through the absolute horror of having to be around us. Sorry to put it in those terms.
Thank you so much, John. I think maybe we can end with this thought. And I wanted to thank you very much. Notify you as soon as we know through our website or on Facebook. You can always go and find out what the association is up to. Or you can join our mailing list. If you look at your screen now, there are a few more details. If you want to join our mailing list, you don't have to be members. Just visit that website, bahaistudies.ca/datamail, and sign up, and we'll keep you up to date with what's happening. And very soon we will have the recording of this session and the handouts and the slides up on our website, so you can go and see them whenever you want, and you can tell your friends as well that they can go and listen to it. Thank you very much, everybody. Good night.